I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dirt and Sprague.
Little tip of the shoulder, but that didn't fool Julian Alvarez. Lautaro Martinez sending it over. Enzo Fernandez. Can you believe this?
Andy Dirt Johnson. Brandon Sprague.
This to send Switzerland through. And he does score! Ruben Vargas! And Switzerland heads to Kansas City to meet Messi and Argentina.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
All right, 6:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 The Fan. And the Fan Sports Network. Hello, happy hump day, good morning.
What is happening?
Nice little Wednesday morning for you.
Off to a good start over there?
I think we're off to a good start. I've been stuck in the vortex of conversation that lingers for a couple days now.
Ooh.
On youth sports.
Ah, yes. It's very debated right now with Team USA bailing out early. Brings everybody's eyes onto the youth soccer program in America.
Well, it's not even so much. I mean, it is a soccer conversation, but like, it's also largely just a where we're at as a country with youth sports conversation. And as somebody involved in youth sports.
Right. I'm going to go out on a limb and say not a good spot.
I think there can be good spots.
Of course.
There are good spots, yes. But I think largely not very good. And then I was wondering yesterday in reading about stuff and seeing comments on a lot. Has there ever been a person attached to a sport that is like overwhelmingly universally hated as much as Alexi Lawless in soccer?
That is a really good question.
I couldn't come up with one in football.
That is a really good question.
I could not come up with one in basketball.
Yeah.
I don't know who it would be in baseball.
Involved with an individual sport, I don't think so.
Like a lead voice of a sport.
Yes.
Being
a lead analyst, lead studio guy.
Look, yeah. Everybody, no matter how or what you think of Alexi Lawless or anybody else on that level, there is always going to be like a 1% to 2% of people that are like, I actually love him. I think he's great.
Of course.
But he has to be at a 96-plus percent hate rate. Right?
I asked that to Patrick yesterday because we were talking about something. He would, you know, him and Thierry Henry were going back and forth, and he's been controversial, to say the least, throughout the course of the tournament. I don't watch a ton of soccer outside of the World Cup. And I asked Patrick, like, is this like a thing where outside people hate him, but soccer fans like him? And he said, no, soccer fans hate him, too.
It's a universal.
So it's the outside people hate him, and the people inside the bubble hate him.
Yep.
There's obviously your big, like your Stephen A. Smiths, your Skip Bayless, not involved in an individual sport,
no.
Different conversation. There are your, you know, play-by-player color analysts that people don't like, but I feel like that's a different kind of don't like. Like Tony Romo. People don't think Tony Romo is very good at his job. That, to me, is different than not liking Alexi Lawless for being controversial as a studio analyst. You just want him to be better as a color analyst.
So the best, I think the best comp I could come up with Alexi Lawless is he Kendrick Perkins or is he Kenny Smith? Because when you put him on a dais,
right,
like you put Kenny Smith on that dais with Shaq and Barkley.
Of course.
Kenny Smith was the Jaylen Brown of his era. He's maybe the seventh best player on a team.
Very good career, but he's not Shaq and he's not Charles Barkley.
A great role guy, and he capitalized
on
in
a championship,
his moments, right?
Yes, of course.
He is that level.
Yeah.
Like when you put Alexi and he might even be too high because Alexi only played very briefly in the MLS.
Comparing him to Ibrahimovic and Thierry Henry, that's
it's crazy.
Yes, those are not the same category of player.
That's, you know,
one is one of the greatest of all time. The other was a dominant force for a long time.
That'd be like putting Michael Kid Gilchrist on the dais with LeBron and Michael Jordan.
Yes, it'd be very similar to that.
And he's pushing back against Michael. What would you know, Michael? Yeah, what would you know? Yeah, like,
do you know what you're talking about? Yeah, I think I know a little bit of what I'm talking
about.
That's MJ
to you, bitch.
I'm going to throw one at you, and I'll see if Swag agrees with this or not. And I don't know how all fans feel about him, but I know there is a general frustration and dislike from the vibes that I see that I think Brandel Chamblee is a little bit of this in golf. He's not to the level of universally disliked, but as I'm just trying to think of people like of even inside the bubble. I mean, I'm not saying I don't like everything that Brandel Chamblee says. There's times I'm like, oh, that's kind of a good point.
Yeah.
But he's more of a, as McDonald will say, he's a bit of a chotch, and he can be a bit of a chotch on TV.
Yeah.
And he kind of knows his role and he plays his role. And so of all the ones that I could think of, that's probably the strongest one of the analysts of the sport who's the lead, like you golf tournament's over. And then you go to the Golf Channel, he's the lead analyst talking about it every single week. And I would say it's 75-25, dislike-to-like ratio. But I think that's a little Lawless is on a different level than that.
The only other one I could come up with in hoops was Perkins.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if Kenny Smith isn't as accomplished a player as Shaq and Charles, sure. He doesn't dabble in the crazy outlandish takes. He doesn't...
No. You know, he's not a hot take guy.
He's an X's and O's at halftime, and
yes.
He offers some insight from a unique perspective compared to those two guys. I think it'd have to be Kendrick Perkins in basketball, because Kendrick Perkins cannot be... I think he's a higher, more liked guy than Lawless, but
yes.
We also all know with brains that right. You throw something at Kendrick and you say, I need you to throw that against the wall,
right?
He'll do it.
You want a crazy take? I'll give you a crazy take today.
Yeah.
You mean say something dumb that everybody can react to? I'll say the dumb thing.
You need me to say that I think Kyle Kuzma could be the third best player on a title team?
I'll do it.
I'll do it right now. And he literally said it last year. Year.
And then everybody yells online, and he gets exactly what he wants out of the entire thing. It's a process that keeps playing itself over and over again.
Who would footballs be?
God, that's a good question.
Is it a college football guy, or is there an NFL version of that?
A college football guy.
Because nobody, here's the unfortunate thing. The numbers would suggest I'm wrong here.
Sure.
But I think nobody watches the pregames. I think people just turn the channels on so they don't miss the kickoff. If you're not watching Red Zone Countdown, you're watching CBS or Fox because you don't buy the Red Zone or the Sunday Ticket.
Right.
I think the numbers would say, well, at Sprague, you're wrong. There's 7 million people watching CBS pregame according to these numbers. And I'd say, no, they have the television on. I don't think you actually sit down and watch pregame.
Yeah, I think there's a difference, too, there's a time difference between viewers. Like, I think on the East Coast, those shows are a bigger deal because the morning slate,
is the afternoon.
It doesn't start till 1 o'clock, and so you got more lead up, and then maybe by the time noon rolls around, you're like, dude, I'm so ready for football that I'm willing to watch an hour pregame show.
Right.
I think we're a little bit different on the West Coast because it's a get up, get your stuff done, game start at 10 o'clock. I turn the channel on at 9:45, and I saw the last 15 minutes of the show because I'm just waiting for the games to start.
I think the only ones that you can like rival some of this stuff.
I'm trying to think of like
Orlovsky is a Lawless.
Yeah.
He's more liked.
Yeah.
But if you're comping careers, I mean, his only accomplishment is running out of the back of the end zone away from Jared Allen.
There's not a lot there for Dan Orlovsky in his NFL career.
The Alexi Lawless of accomplished pro athlete
right.
on a dais of Ryan Clark or Michael Irving.
Sure, guys who had tremendous careers and long NFL careers, some in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, it's a little bit different. Is Terry Bradshaw up there for people?
He's got 4 rings.
I know he does. I'm talking about unlikable, though, not the quality of the player.
No, I think people are like, okay, he's kind of done, but I think most people...
I've gotten to the point where it's just like...
No, there's a lot of people that really love Terry Bradshaw.
I think it's a 65% hit rate.
He's kind of your lovable uncle that's starting to, you wonder when he's ready to, you know.
Isn't he Lee Corso to a certain degree?
For a funny, goofy, he's got a Peaky Blinders hat on.
He's been in movies. And,
fair. Trying to think of it, because this is the funny part, is I don't watch any other NFL pregame shows. Like, I could probably run through the list of people.
Bill Cowher is not Alexi Lawless.
No, he's not in any way. Fox is, I think he got Gronk on there.
I mean, there are none on those shows. And by the way, nobody's watching that show at the level that we're watching World Cup stuff.
No. Yeah. Pat McAfee in college football can be controversial to some, but he's also beloved by so many people that he doesn't count in this category
far
either.
And away out of this conversation.
And I think he's been a direct driver of College Game Day's ratings going up is because the show's more energetic.
That's why he got $60 million a year.
Exactly. He knows what he's doing. Yeah, I don't think there's any other comp. I don't think I can find one.
What is Kirk Herbstreit's likability rating, you think?
It's a lot lower than it was probably 5 years ago. I think his is on the decline. Mm. But, again, I don't think he's to that level quite yet.
He's not Lawless level.
He's not Lawless level. But it's certainly going in that direction. And if he continues, maybe it will get there for some. But he's maybe the best. Like, I can't stand Urban Meyer. I think it's kind of. I think he's a bit of a fraud, and he's a sleazy guy, and so he's on that pregame show.
I know,
but
like,
I'm not saying he's Alexi Lawless.
Does he say anything that's crazy?
No, I'm just.
I don't like Urban Meyer either.
I can't stand him, but it's not for the Alexi Lawless reasons, where he's giving you hot takes and yelling stuff out. Portnoy's probably this because he's on the Big Noon Kickoff show. Technically, as a fill-in guy,
I am not a Dave Portnoy fan in any way. I mean,
you're not gonna buy his book. What's the matter with you?
He's writing a book.
He got a book out. You want to go buy his book?
What's the book about?
Cancel me if you can.
Cancel me if you can.
Can't cancel me, baby.
I love the I've been canceled guy when it's pretty evident he hasn't been canceled.
You can't cancel me. I'm uncancelable. Try canceling me.
I always enjoy that.
Good luck out there.
Many a comedian have built their careers on I've been canceled. But welcome to my Madison Square Garden show on Netflix.
I saw clips the other day rolling around. Louis C.K.'s got a new comedy special out.
I saw a little bit of it.
Like, oh, Louis C.K. Okay. I don't know if he's done a handful, but we're back in the mix now, huh?
Yeah. And it has nothing to do with the canceled, not canceled
thing.
You want to sit in a corner and make people feel uncomfortable and pull your pants down. You do what you need to do, I guess. I was just in it for like the joke telling.
Pull your pants up, all right?
And I just was like,
underwhelming,
you know.
Huh?
I mean, it wasn't, you know.
The one joke I saw.
I really enjoyed his TV show back in the day on FX,
I did too.
Louis.
I did love Louis back in the day. Yeah, there was one joke about, you know, strangers talking to him and him telling strangers to shut up. And I'm like, all right, this just kind of feels like the old man yelling in a cloud bit. I don't know if that still plays.
He had a bit on people that when the sun is out.
Oh,
like,
it's a nice day.
And he's
grow
like,
up.
Shut up. Yeah. And then people pulled clips, and it was like him on a late show. And he's like, you know, sometimes the sun's out, and it just makes it a better day, doesn't it? It's like, that was 10 years ago.
What's changed for you, Louis? Are you a little more hardened now, a little more angry? Yeah. It is, like, the Alexi Lawless thing is hilarious.
Dude,
it has been one of the most compelling storylines, honestly, for me the entire tournament, is him getting into it with Ibrahimovic. Ibrahimovic insinuating that he got kicked off the desk for, like, a show or two, saying, you're welcome, America. The Thierry Henry facial expressions when him and Zlatan were going back and forth. And then it was reversed the other night when Thierry Henry got into it with him about the president calling and overturning the red card. And Ibrahimovic's face the entire time was hilarious. He's just sitting in between the two of them, smirking and smiling. Like, what are we doing right now?
Well, yesterday
he
tweeted about youth soccer in America because, of course, that becomes the conversation anytime we underwhelm or we get...
You mean literally every World Cup because every World Cup's the same?
You know where... We're the only host country to host multiple World Cups and never get to the quarterfinals or better.
That's not good, Bob.
I learned that yesterday. And
that's
I was like,
not good.
Well, that's kind of sad.
I saw a graphic and was reminded of literally in the last four World Cups we've played in. Now, we missed, 2018, I think, was the one we missed.
Yeah.
That was a disaster. But in 14, like, you go through the list of all of them, we've gone to the same round every time. And there's this insinuation and feeling that we took some big step this year when, in reality, we lost by a wider margin in the round of 16 than we had the last three times that we were there.
Well, I mean, it's just, it's basically begged the question of, like, how do you make your youth programs, I think this for any sport, really, but, like, how do you make them better for everybody, and also how do you make it that improves?
It's really complicated because it feels like the toothpaste is so far out of the tube that there's no putting that toothpaste back in the tube.
I think you could say that for almost anything in society.
Yes,
sadly.
Good luck fixing this because it is so far down the road, man, and you can't turn that thing around.
You want data centers to go away? Do you imagine that's what's going to happen with those big-ass buildings?
They're just going to cease
to exist?
You win. Okay, fine. We'll close them all down.
But he was, like, super in on the business element of youth sports. And obviously, people just dunked on him all day.
It's always hard because I'm certainly not an expert on this. Maybe I'll know more about it in the years to come when Teddy gets older. But on the things that you read and you try and like dive in, like what is it actually like in youth soccer? And it was crazy to read some of the stuff. And you kind of pointed out, was it Norway and the way that they run their youth programs?
Yeah, they basically just created programs that don't charge you $14,000 a year. Like a lot of European clubs operate in the sense of kids can earn the amount of money that a club would cost by the way they play.
Right, right.
They're basically given all of these opportunities that many and millions of kids in America never will because it's like, how much is your travel team? Well,
right.
it's $2,000 for this season, then it's $3,000 for that season, and then
right.
on top of the travel cost, we got to go to Arizona and California.
Never
and
ends.
Going to a tournament in Texas. Right. And I'm like, unless your kid is the super gifted kid who gets picked to be on the LeBron James AAU team for free and they comp travel, that's less than 0.001% of kids who get that right. opportunity.
And it was reading about other countries on top of Norway and the way that they handle the youth player essentially being the customer, and the idea that it's like literally the opposite in a lot of European countries with their youth academy soccer programs, that they pay the kids to play for their program.
Yeah.
Because if you turn that player into X, Y, and Z quality of a prospect, right. and he goes and signs with a European club or, you know, whatever,
yep.
guess who's getting paid?
Exactly.
The program that developed him. And in America, it's literally the opposite, where the customer is not the kid, the customer is the parent. And as long as you're doing enough to entice the parent to want to spend $15,000 a year, mm-hmm. guess what doesn't stop? Your business model.
Yeah.
And it's just a backwards way of looking at it, where all these places in Europe have figured out that because then you pour yourself into the player even more, because that's your golden ticket. If you turn this kid into a guy who wants to go, you know, sign with Manchester City, you're getting a lot of money out of that deal. And guess what funds your youth academy? That, turning the player into the prospect. Mm-hmm. And here it's the opposite. And there's a drive of like not even wanting to cut kids because they're customers and they're spending $15,000 a year
oh, yeah.
to be a part of your youth academy. And so you don't get rid of some of the riffraff. It splits off of kids who can afford it and who can't afford it. At a really pivotal age, like by the time you get to 11 or 12, the idea of you can't spend this, you can't play on our team, that's like the peak development years of your youth athletic career.
Well, I noticed, you know, coaching at a club and coaching youth sports in the last couple of years, I noticed a lot of things about the culture of it. I'd never really
right.
been around it. When I was high school, you had some camp stuff, and I know you had like youth teams, but we didn't participate in that. My mom wasn't going to shell out for that, so no. It was like I never was on that stuff.
No.
You'd play in your summer leagues for your high school if they had it, or camp if yeah. they provided it. But
baseball was the same back in the day.
Yeah. It's interesting because I'd heard in basketball, women's basketball, because that's the only one I can speak of because I'm not involved in men, but I imagine it's somewhat similar. And I just saw an interview with Julie Ertz, the former U.S. women's soccer player.
Yes.
And they were talking about how even when they were in high school, they were being driven in soccer to not play high school. That they were like,
do club instead of the school.
Just do club.
Yeah.
And I've noted that, like, in basketball, I've talked to enough people to just conclude that, like, you're not getting a 90% dropout rate, but you're getting really good players around the country that are kind of being told, like, yo, we're going to give you a scholarship.
What's the point?
Why don't you play for this travel team and right. not play for your high school? Like, they're deprioritizing.
Right. Go play in your showcase events yeah. against better talented players.
Go play at
players.
Arizona in December. Right. Don't be playing right. for your high school team against your right. arch rival down the road. Nobody right. cares about that anymore.
In the neighborhood you grew up in. Why would yeah. you want to do that?
And that's a sad thing to me, because I think yes. that's an element of growing up that we shouldn't be taking away from children.
Right.
And making their parents feel like, well, if I don't do this, what's going to happen? Like,
you got to keep up with the Joneses, right? That kid's going to get a scholarship. I want my kid to get a scholarship.
Well, I saw people jumping into the fray on this topic of developing youth soccer, and many people pointed out, whether it's accurate to some or most, like, you're getting a lot of kids, and we're driving them to D1 Academy, to D1 schools, go play soccer at Oregon or Oregon State. And it's not that you can't, like, become a really good pro from those places, but where are most of the pros
right.
scouted from?
Right.
Europe. International.
Yes.
South America. Like, Argentina has youth programs. I think I read yesterday they have a youth program here.
In the United States.
For kids who can be dual citizens of America and Argentina.
You got to do what you got to do, baby.
And like our guy Bart Winkler in Milwaukee, he's doing his podcast, and his kid is in youth sports, and he's like, under 13 U.S. soccer does not care about U.S. Soccer World Cup. They care about beating the other team across state lines.
Yes, that's all that matters
to them. It's all about just bleeding.
And what their bottom yes. line is and what the parents are paying. That's
yeah.
all that matters to them. And as long as that is the case, like, nothing is going to change. And guess what we're going to do? We're going to forget about this in about a month. The World Cup will come to an end. We'll crown a champion. Football season will get here.
Yeah.
4 years from now, we'll have another World Cup. And the Team USA will get to the round of 16 mm-hmm. and take a dump in their pants. And we'll have the exact same conversation of why is this broke? Because this has been the exact same thing we've done every 4 years of my adult life.
I just think, like, even if you are ready for soccer to be done as a topic, because most of our audience isn't diehard soccer fans, totally fine to have the opinion. My takeaway is more just so, like, shouldn't this event that made us feel so good,
right,
and gave us entertainment yesterday, Switzerland beating Colombia, like in a PK.
That was a great. Both games were unbelievable.
Argentina
yesterday.
With three goals in like a 6 minute
span. Poor Egypt, dude. Poor Egypt.
Egypt just choking God. On the net. Like, even if we've enjoyed this and USA had a fun ride, you still got to the same spot you always get to. You're disappointed yes. at home. Your effort was crap. This should be more of a conversation, not so much about soccer, but like, shouldn't these moments I feel like used to motivate our country.
Yes, to push us in the right direction. Of how do we need to sit down and figure out answers to this problem.
Education's very similar to me. Right. I know it's much more important than sports, but like, where you rank in the world, that used to be a thing I'd hear about as a kid.
Right. We're 91st in reading. Wait, what?
We want to be first in science and math. And now it's right. like, well, the money. Right. The money. Right. None of it is like prioritized. No. My takeaway yesterday from Alexi Lawless was I got kind of obsessed with thinking about it and being a part of youth sports and then reading yeah. people's commentary just in soccer because I'm not familiar with it.
Right.
And, It's certainly something, man. I have people in my life, in my orbit, that like their kids do year-round soccer, and single parents, I don't know how they afford it. I don't know how they do it, man. And their kids are really good, but they're not being given a free ride to all this stuff.
Right, right. It's one thing if you end up getting a college scholarship out of it that saves your family hundreds of thousands of
right.
dollars, then maybe it's all worth it. But if not, that's a lot of money to spend yeah. just to have a good little local soccer player.
Well, I was asking, we have people in our building that are connected to youth sports, and I was asking them not very long ago, like, I'm just shocked as a basketball guy that we don't have academies here.
Yeah.
Like our Portland Fire coach, Alex Sarama, I learned about him through like reading about some of his stuff online. He became very popular at a young age. I think he's like 31 or 32.
Super young guy.
Dude,
yeah.
He's been coaching at academies in Europe forever. And they just have straight sports academies. And
right.
It's okay to not want your kid to be in a sports academy. I'm just shocked we haven't gotten to that, but it's also about the do-re-mi in this country.
Exactly.
And not so much about, like, the development
the
process of it.
That's like because I'm with you. This used to be a thing where we'd come together and find some answers for it. The tough part is the answers mean a lot of businesses have to take a loss.
Or
shutter their
exist.
Doors.
Right,
and you're
yeah.
just not going to get people to say, sure, end my livelihood that I've made hundreds of thousands of dollars on. I would gladly do this for the betterment of Team USA 4 years from now in the World Cup. Like, you're just not going to get people that want to do that. And so that's a difficult part of it. And that's why it feels like as a lot of things do in this country, a daunting problem that we're not going to be able to solve because of that fundamental flaw.
Yeah, so it's just been stuck on my mind the last, like, 24 hours.
It's a fun thing to debate, man, especially now with kids. Like, it used to be a topic that I'm like, yeah, we'll talk about this. I'll speak about my experience as a youth athlete. When you become a parent, it becomes different, man.
Yeah, you start to get...
Dude, I was talking to my neighbor the other night on the 4th of July, and he was telling me his kid's getting ready to go to OSU. And I was like, how much the in-state tuition cost? They told me the amount that it still is, and I'm like, oh, my God. I looked over at Teddy. Buddy, what do you want to do? Golf? What are we going to do? Soccer? What are we going to do right now, huh? Let's get you into one of these academies, okay? Get a scholarship.
Let's
I'm not paying for that.
Do the 2-year community college journey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then transfer over to cut your
debt.
We
ain't doing 4 years of that, man. Hell no. It's way too expensive.
Well, we got a fun show in store for you, Dirt and Sprague. Let's get it going next. 105.1 The Fan.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 6:28. Welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague with you on this beautiful, happy
hump day.
Hope your Wednesday's off to a nice little start early this morning. Keith Smith is going to join us from Spot Track. I want to dive into some of the numbers stuff with the Blazers today.
Yeah, what do we project as with our 5-guard lineup? How many wins do we see in the analytical column?
Where do we stack up once we sign our 2-way guy as our final sign of the summer? Because we're definitely going to sign a forward that's a 2-way.
I saw a growing momentum from Blazer fans. Like, can we re-sign Trenton Watford? And we're like, all right, that's where we're at right now in the offseason.
That's what I talked about on Monday, dude.
That's where we're at.
For the Trenton Watford reunion.
He's back, baby! Blazer legend.
So we'll get to Keith Smith at 8:27. We got a status story Wednesday to deliver with you. College football. Got a lot of college football. Yesterday, did the Big 12 actually prove against my point that you should have a media day. I mean, maybe.
Also, there's no way the business deal they signed is good, right? When you read the details of what they're... What? That's it?
It's one of the biggest fleece jobs a company's ever accomplished over an entity.
Yes.
Ever.
I don't care how much free stuff they throw in. It don't matter, man.
No.
That's a horrible deal.
So we'll get to all of that today. So something we haven't talked about, because I was out, you were in, I was in, you were out.
Yes.
And I don't want to relitigate everything. The Jaylen Brown trade.
Yeah, you were gone the day of the Jaylen Brown trade.
I missed the Jaylen Brown trade day. If it was the Blazers, I would have probably audibled
canceled
and
your day
showed
off.
Up, be honest with you.
I'm coming in hot.
I'm not missing that show.
No.
But Jaylen Brown's traded, and then this big analytics narrative and where he ranks, and is he the seventh best player on every team? Is he the 88th best player? The report that the Blazers valued him as a net negative.
Yes. Their analytical department said not worth it.
I thought Zach Lowe and Bobby Marks nailed this on Zach Lowe's podcast of like, we have eyeballs, we have brains. You can view somebody analytically, but how you view them and stack them up in the grand scheme of the league is a different conversation. And so analytically, paired with the contract, teams valued him at only so much.
Right.
Thinks he's overpaid, right? I was thinking about, as they were talking about that, how out of left field it feels for many. Like, if I told almost anybody out there that last summer, and I say, hey, a year from now, Jaylen Brown's going to get traded for Paul George and a couple picks.
That's it.
That's all it would cost you.
Podcast P and two Philadelphia picks.
I don't know if anybody believes me.
No.
Right? If I didn't give you any of the context but the trade. And so I'm going to ask you this. We currently have a franchise quarterback stealthily flying under the radar in the middle of a contract extension. And I'm just wondering, are we going to have a Jaylen Brown value versus analytics versus win percentage versus plus minus? Like, are we going to have this?
What's his plus minus?
Well, I'm just like, are we going to have this at some point sooner than we think in the quarterback conversation? Because when you talk about percentage of salary cap.
Yes, that's the conversation.
And look, these teams are not cheap to buy. And guess what? They're not cheap to run either, especially in a sport like football, man. So I'm more thinking about a Lamar Jackson here, who already went through a contract stuff. We thought he was going to get traded because they weren't sure where they were at on it.
He held out forever, and Atlanta even said no to the trade.
It was three first-round picks would have gotten you Lamar Jackson, and Carolina and Atlanta and was it New Orleans and somebody else, I think, all said, man, thanks, no thanks. And now he is back up, and he's going through these windows of negotiation. And I'm not saying he is the one, but I am wondering, are we going to get to a point where, much like the Jaylen Brown conversation hitting us out of left field, a team goes, not that number.
It's funny because I'm glad you brought up Lamar, because there's other young guys. Like, I think NFL teams are – I don't know, maybe I'm overreacting to certain quarterbacks being in the news right now, but I feel like there's an understanding of there's no rush to do this. Like, C.J. Stroud in Houston is a great example of this, where it felt like for a couple of years there was this idea of, like, you got to rush to get the deal done. The market is only going to go up. Let's get the deal done now, because in 2 years, if we wait, it'll cost us an extra X million dollars. And Houston right now is like, no, dude, we're not. Why would we give you an extension right now?
Especially after that playoff.
You play great this year? By all means, man. We'll pay the extra money that we have to endure next season, depending on where the quarterback market goes, but right now you're not worth it. That's not a Jaylen Brown comp, because Jaylen Brown's an elite player. We can debate the plus and minus. You can debate where he ranks in the NBA. He's a finals MVP, and he's been one of the best players in the NBA over the last 10 years. Mm. That's where I think the Lamar Jackson debate is valid, because Lamar, look, we can do the can't win a playoff game, which will exist until he wins a playoff game, and then everybody will just shut up and act like that conversation never happened. But he is a guy that's been very debated his entire career of what is the value, what is the risk of him getting hurt, do you really want to pay him $60 million? Now, my answer for both of these guys is a universal and an adamant yes. The idea in Boston that I do understand, and we played the audio clip yesterday, it's the point of Tatum and Brown taking up 70% of your salary cap space.
Right.
Like, that's a debate
that's
and a conversation.
That's different than what quarterbacks are taking
no
up.
No doubt. That I can say, all right, I understand that. You think it's very hard to build a team paying two guys 70% of your salary cap, and you only have 30% left to fill out the rest of your roster. That's not. It's a hard way to build a championship team. So your idea is, let's flip Brown. Paul George's contract will come off the books. We got a couple of first-round picks. and we're going to try and spread that money out and have a more evenly balanced roster with Tatum being our best player. That's an argument that I could understand. The analytical crowd, the idea that he's not a good player, the idea that you wouldn't want him or he's a negative, that's the kind of stuff that I just roll my eyes at and I laugh at because it's ludicrous and it's dumb and it's nerds taking over when they shouldn't take over. If Lamar Jackson and Jaylen Brown are up for conversation and I'm the general manager in the NFL or the NBA, it's an adamant yes. I want that player on my team. I know how good he is. I know what the ceiling is. They're both still in the primes of their careers. They're not going anywhere anytime soon, and I'm doing anything I can to get into business with them. And I talked about this on Thursday when you're out. Like, you can sell me the, well, those picks are going to have nice value down the road, or you don't want to give up all your assets for one player, and what does it mean for where does he play? Do you move Tumani Kamara to the bench? Like, all right, that's fine. What's the player that's going to be available next offseason?
I don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know yet.
Is that player going to want to play in Portland?
There's a report that maybe Jaylen Brown wasn't super stoked on the idea of playing in Portland.
Guess what? He's got 3 years left on his contract, and he didn't have a no-trade clause. So
right.
You know what doesn't matter? Him wanting or not wanting to play in Portland. Guess what's going to happen, buddy? You're getting on a plane. You're coming to Portland. You're playing there for 3 years.
Yeah.
Unless we trade your expiring contract in the last year of the deal. Like, this idea that, well, don't worry, there'll be another one available. Like, has anybody else followed the Blazers their entire life? This idea that these superstars are just hanging on trees? Well, we got picks. We'll go get one eventually. You got to find a guy who either has a contract like Jaylen Brown or wants to be here, and that's not readily available every offseason.
So one thing I want to talk with Keith Smith on, because I think we've heard it, but I always forget it, so I want to make sure I note it today. If Denny runs out the deal to get the extension, I want to know what the number is.
It's going to be big.
Okay, so like,
if he's an all-NBA guy especially, it's going to be a massive deal.
Because the organization is kind of telling you, like, they obviously value the contract he's on now. I think they're also telling you, we have the plans to give him the bag.
Yes.
So like,
him and Klingon will be our extension guys in 2 years.
Where are we going to be on that as a fan base?
Right.
Like, you're going to give him the Jaylen Brown contract. I don't know if he'd be eligible for that much, but like, the Donovan Mitchell, he might be making $60 million right. a year contract.
Right.
How Donovan are we going to feel about Denny Avdia?
Donovan Mitchell's a good player. That's a lot of money.
It is a ton of money.
I remember bringing this up last year during the season and people throwing tomatoes
at me. He's
going
to make $70 to $75 right. a year on right. a four-year extension. He's going to be 39 by the end of that extension with Cleveland.
Yes.
If he is in Cleveland.
I brought this up with Orlando and Bancaro last offseason of like, I know Bancaro is a good player. I don't doubt that he's a... maybe an all-NBA caliber guy,
but
you're paying him a lot of your salary cap, and is he a good enough one? Now, maybe New York will tell you, and Indiana will tell you you can build it out the rest of the way, but in New York, you also had your best player taking a discount that allowed you to build the roster out.
But one element, the fallout element of that, and I think you can apply this to any sport, really, is like the fallout element of it is the league is valuing the random nature of who wins the title, right? They want the parity. They want to say, hey, this year there could be 10 teams. Hey, next year it could be 11.
Could be anybody.
They love that position. What they haven't taken into account, I think, and I feel like this is a pretty obvious thing to say, they're not valuing the organization and fan aspect of, we got this guy, we developed this guy.
He's our guy, won a title with this guy.
Did you see the video? I mean, it's one kid, right? But like, have you seen the little video of the kid? He's a diehard Celtic Brown fan. Like Jaylen Brown's, he's got a jersey signed by him.
He's crying,
he's
probably.
He's like 7 years old. He's crying when he finds out that he's been traded. So yeah. Jaylen Brown sees this, actually links up with the family, and goes and gives the kid a hug and says, "Be okay, cool. man. You still see me. I'll come back to town when I play." That is an aspect that you may not care that much about as a grown sports fan, but it's absolutely an aspect of team building that this league, whether it was inconsequential to them or not, like it just it's massively stupid.
You're
and it's
blowing
sucks.
Teams up before they need to be blown up.
Because you love to watch the guy come here, grow, become a great player, and not be penalized. In Boston, Brad Stevens basically told you, we're being penalized because Jaylen Brown's so good that we gave him a contract that value-wise was good to us, but because of the restructuring of CBA stuff, we financially now, this doesn't make any sense, and a lot of teams are sitting in that position. Nikola Jokic, who you would put as the GOAT,
Yes.
Jokingly.
I mean, yeah.
He's not going to sign an extension this year because next year he's going to get a five-year, like, $340 million extension.
Right. It's the same reason Denny's not signing right now either, because in two years he's going to get paid out the butt.
You're putting organizations and, I think, fan bases in really bad spots by almost penalizing them. Remember when we were given an extra year on the CBA to sign the player for more money? But what they didn't do is restructure the percentage of the cap, and that's only gotten worse.
Yes.
So you weirdly want player movement to stop because people do hate it, but also you don't reward the team that drafted or got the player, and now they're at a certain level.
Yeah.
You penalize them because the percentage of that cap on that contract is too high for them to operate the rest of the organization.
Well, and the other part of this, and this is where NFL quarterback contracts are a little bit different in my mind, is that we know where is the NFL salary cap going every year.
I mean, it's gone.
It's going
up
to the moon
the
literally every
not,
season.
By the way, going up.
And
the way
this is
it.
The point, right? So when they got the new CBA, I remember we did a segment on it last year during the regular season that some of the projections were coming in, and while the number was still going up based on what their projections were, it has taken a sharp drop off from where they thought it was going to go. And so when the new CBA was signed, you had this thought in your head of, well, 2 years from now, the cap will be X amount of dollars, this percentage on these players. Okay, we can make that work. And now that that number is coming down, it's still going up every year from where it was, but not to the level that they thought it was going to. That's going to make this an even more realistic problem, because the hope was $7 billion deal. We got all the NBC, all these new people involved. Look, the salary cap will keep going up. So if we got a guy on a $60 million contract,
right,
in 3 years it won't matter as much because the cap will jump by $40 million, and that is certainly not the case right now.
Joe Burrow, 24.5% of the cap for the Bengals. Dak Prescott, 23.5%. Herbert, 23.4% of the cap. And yeah, Lamar right now is at 23.1%.
Right. We're talking about Brown and Tatum being 70% of the
They're
Celtics
35
cap.
35 each.
Right.
They're 10% higher.
There's two guys who just suck up every penny, basically, you got.
So you know, the NBA, they love to react to stuff and they love to freak out over what the internet says. I hope they're seeing this and noting like how truly awful this is.
It helps that powerful organizations are going through this, because if this is happening to like the Orlando Magic, I don't know if anybody cares, but it's the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
And when the Boston Celtics are in the news,
yep,
and their brass is saying this, you know that Adam Silver is going to take it seriously.
A lot more to get into, including the consequences of something not going through yet, maybe paying dividends here for people who are super pro this locally. We'll talk about that coming up. We'll dive into college football as well. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more 641 on the Fan.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up, do we have a development locally that should make many that are pro the Moda Center funding happy? We'll get to that. Got a lot of college football to dive into today.
Yes.
I'm going to get to something here in just a second.
Yes.
I just want to note for everybody's sake, my sanity level right now, where I'm at.
Where you at right now?
The Braves have exactly a week left before the All-Star break. Could be the first team in Major League Baseball history to blow a 10-game division lead before the All-Star break.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you.
You guys are still stinking that bad, huh?
We are horrific.
I mean, I gave up on baseball a month and a half ago, so your updates are about all I'm seeing.
If we miss the playoffs, I think most Braves fans might be there mentally. The pitching staff is a disaster. Everybody's hurt. They're in and out of the lineup. We just got shelled by, what's that guy? Ryan O'Hearn.
Dude, did you see Paul Skeens quote about that after the game? He had a hilarious line. He was like, I mean, kind of selfish.
Kind of
selfish.
It's a rally killer, a 3-1.
Other guys can't get RBIs. Every time there's guys on base, you got to hit home run. Can we share the love a little bit here? I mean, good for him, I guess.
Yeah, it was not good. It hasn't been fun to watch Braves game. In fact, I've skipped like 3 of their last 8 games because I'm like,
come on over,
baby.
The water's warm. 7 Saturdays until college football, man. We're almost there.
We'll get to college football. We'll take a momentary pause in between. I wanted to share this because I saw this. I started laughing and I went, oh, I know who will enjoy this quote. You're always going to have one of those games that is outside your weight class. But you know what? You don't have to beat them 10 times. You have to find a way to beat them once, right? Let's go up the ramp! That's Boise State's Spencer Danielson on playing Oregon in week one.
Bring it on, Spencer. Nobody's scared of a coach named Spencer, even though you almost beat us 2 years ago. and it was kind of a miracle that we won the game anyways.
Who was the most successful football-based Spencer in our lives?
Ooh, good question.
Spencer doesn't necessarily scream football to
Spencer
me.
Spencer Tillman?
Okay.
Okay.
You got another one?
No. I don't.
Dirt. Truth syrup.
I'm Googling Spencer's
You're
right now.
I'm Googling Spencer Tillman.
Oh, no. Not Spencer Tillman. I'm Googling the famous Spencers. Spencer Haywood?
Okay, there's one. There we go.
I got Spencer Lee, who was a wrestler.
Yep. That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
Spencer Haywood was hoops.
He was hoops. I'm well aware of that. There was a
But Spencer's
Spencer
not really
Lee
a sports
wrestler.
Name.
No, to prove the point. Yeah. He did win an ABA MVP at the age of 21.
Yes,
so,
he did.
You know,
so you got that going for you.
You know what? Maybe it's making me feel better about our season opener. You shouldn't be scared of a Spencer, even though, again, they almost beat us the last time they were in Autzen Stadium. And
I'm a closet Artis Gilmore fan.
I am one of the Duck fans who is, I think, in the right side of the opinion of, why do we keep scheduling Boise State? Can we stop playing Boise State?
Well, was this recently scheduled? Is this one of those, like, you've said
it's lingered
two
for games? A while. I think it's been lingering
okay,
for a while.
Okay, so maybe you're
we
not
don't
go
there anymore, at least, so thank God for that. I never want to go play on that stupid blue turf again because it's a house of horrors for us. I did have the thought, though, because I saw this yesterday and I started chuckling. Duck fans are all saying the same thing, right? Ooh, red meat for landing. Like, that's going to work on July 7th.
I think barely beating him last time is the red meat red he meat. Needs, you know?
I don't think he's going to be outraged by this quote. But I did have the thought dawn on me of, because I think I'm one that thinks Oregon's first two games are interesting, right? Boise is the opener. It's their first game in the Pac-12.
It's certainly not like some walk-through.
No, it's not Portland
team,
State.
You know?
You play Portland State, but that's not until week three. And then in week two, you go down to Oklahoma State, and they got a new coach. And they brought in their quarterback, Mestemaker's there. Like, you're going to probably win both games, but it's not like you just roll in and win the game by 70 that you kind of had a bit of a feeling last year. But the thought dawned on me yesterday of Boise State and Oregon are going to play the opening football game at Autzen Stadium the week after Labor Day or Labor Day weekend. And Boise State's going to have a Pac-12 logo on their jersey playing at Autzen Stadium. Like, there's an Oregon Boise State game.
And
one of them's a Pac-12 team, and it's not Oregon. And just that thought of, like, that's really dumb.
That's a very good point.
One of them's going to have a Big Ten logo, and one of them's going to have a Pac-12 logo. And Oregon is not the one that's having it's just all of it's stupid.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited about the game. And this quote did get me thinking, like, ooh, let's go, baby. I can't wait. It'd be nice to finally beat Boise State one time the way that we should beat Boise State.
Well, I mean, what is that even? I don't know what that means. Boise State's been a really good
football
team.
Boise State's a really good football team. Oregon is a little bit better than a really good football team this year. What are the expectations for Oregon this year?
Yeah.
What are the expectations for Boise State this year?
What were the expectations a couple years ago when Noah Whittington
exactly my point. It'd be nice to not do that one time and just have the game over at halftime and let me put my feet up in the second half and watch some stress-free football.
Yeah.
For once in my life. Never happens when we play Boise State.
No, it doesn't.
So my pucker's already there. That game's 2 months away and I'm already puckering over it.
So you see this quote from the head coach of Boise State and you kind of go, oh, crap.
I go, he's not wrong.
No, he's, yeah.
Boise State couldn't survive playing Ohio State, Indiana, Michigan, USC, and Oregon in their conference schedule, but you got one time, you got to do it. That's it.
Well, and it's the first game of the year is the second part, and then also to add to it is a third part. It's the most healthy they'll be all season.
Right.
They'll just come into that game ready to go,
right?
And you're just going to be like, that's our start.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Don't trip out of the starting gate, okay?
I love opening weekends, the early slate of college football when you get these non-conference tilts. Yeah. I do. I think I also sit in the side of, like, I'd prefer, I think, my team to have the cupcake at the
very
first.
You want Portland State in the first game of the
year. I
mean,
I don't want it, really, as a viewer, because I'm going to turn that game off by halftime because it's 77-0 or whatever.
But if everybody else is doing it, why don't you do it kind of thing?
Yeah, well, also, it's like your first game, right? So even if you feel good about what your camp was, your spring, your roster coming back.
It's always an unknown. You got two new coordinators.
You might take a quarter. It might take a quarter for them to wake up and get it going, right? It's no different than an NBA team. Adding Jaylen Brown to the Sixers. They might suck out the gate because they're learning how to play with each other.
Without a doubt.
And so you don't want the immediate, oh my God, we're up 7-6 on Boise State at halftime?
No, you're just uncomfortable.
Dante was a Heisman guy.
Now the rest of the game, you're just sitting there panicked the entire, please don't let something stupid happen.
Well, even if you end up winning that game like 31-10
right.
or whatever it is, you know, like.
We gave a death certificate to Oregon football when they beat Boise State the way they beat them last time.
Yeah.
That was it because they damn near lost in week one to Idaho, and then week two, they probably should have lost to Boise State.
I'd argue in some regard, there was a chunk of over. Duck fans that gave you the death certificate for winning your playoff game against James Madison the way you did.
Yeah, that's the way we exist, baby.
So, yeah, I hate the cupcake game. I do. As a viewer, I don't get excited in any way.
Yeah, it's a test right out of the gate because Boise State's certainly a G6 playoff contender, right? Like, they're the favorite probably.
They might be the leader in the clubhouse.
Right? Might be the leader in the clubhouse. So it's a well-run program. We all know that. And then you point to the game 2 years ago and how uncomfortable it was. You had a new quarterback. You had new pieces on the offensive line. There was communication issues. Your protection wasn't set up. And so what do you have this year? You have a new offensive coordinator calling plays for the first time. You're going to have, what, three new starting offensive linemen, I believe? At least two, maybe three. Some of the guys have played, but, right, there's new faces, new communication. So it's just there's a lot of newness that you're going to have to get over. And that's your point, I think, of playing Portland State. You can get through it playing Portland State, but if you make mistakes against a team like Boise, they can make you pay.
A local note we need to pass along of is the pressure getting to people. We'll get to that in the second hour. We'll also dive into college football, Big 12 Media Day. Did it make the point that the Pac-12 shouldn't have a media day? We got a lot of audio to get to in college football. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague, 105.1, The Fan.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.